16th of February, and we're talking with renowned Pirate Radio historian Ian Bigger. You're a historian of Pirate Radio because you've collected so much stuff over the years. Let's go back to the very beginning. What got you interested in all of this? What's your first memory of radio, in fact?
Well, I mean, this is going way back to when I was probably 5, 6 years old. There was a pirate radio ship anchored off Ayrshire, where I was brought up, called Radio Scotland, broadcasting from the ship Comet. As I say, I was only 5 years old, but my sister, who's older than me, 9 years older than me, she was a big pop music fan at the time, and she listened a lot to Radio Scotland. She was a member of their fan club, which was called the 242 Clan. So I remember seeing that, and you know, even in my young, very young mind at that time, there must have been a certain fascination for this broadcasting from ships. Because I remember seeing a photograph of the Comet in one of the local papers, you know, and thinking, you know, this thing with the big mast on it, you know, I thought, oh, that looks quite interesting. And I remember when the station went off the air, around about, when would it be, April, May 1967, because they were found broadcasting within territorial waters in Troon Bay. So they had to move the ship all the way back round to the east coast of Scotland, where it had been originally when it came on air. But there was problems with the signal, getting the signal to Glasgow, where this the majority of the advertising base was, you know. So they moved it back to the east coast, where obviously reception, where we were in Ayrshire, near the west coast, was not so good. I remember my sister saying, oh, Radio Scotland's gone off the air. Mm-hmm. So I don't think she actually listened to it again after that, even though it was still broadcasting. She probably went back to Caroline North or whatever, simply because the signal wasn't so good back on the west coast. Then I remember when it actually did go off the air in August 1967, my sister gave me a newspaper cutting, because at school we used to take in a newspaper cutting every Monday for news. And I remember taking this cutting with a photograph of the Comet on there with its big aerial, saying that Radio Scotland had closed down due to government legislation. And that was my first recollection really of radio and having some sort of vague interest in it. After that, really, then it just kind of faded away. I got interested in other things, as a 5 or 6 year old would do, you know, get interested in football and so on, until it must have been late 1972, when we were watching TV around about just after Christmas, I think it was 1972, and there was a BBC news report about Radio Caroline that had just come back on the air from the Dutch coast, and there was a mutiny on board the ship. Some of the Dutch crew claimed that the English DJs were taking over the ship, and anyway, it had come to a point where it was getting newspaper coverage and BBC coverage. I remember watching this on TV and thinking, oh yeah, I remember that, you know, radio stations from ships. And my uncle was up from London, and I remember him saying, oh, I thought that went off the air years ago, or changed its name to Radio North Sea. So a couple of days later, I remember tuning, because at that time I'd be, what, 11 years old, I was starting to get into music. I was a big David Bowie fan, which I remained for all of my life, really. And I remember tuning down from Radio Luxembourg to Radio 1 before I was getting ready to go to school in the morning. And I came across a radio station playing The Gin Genie by David Bowie, which was my favourite song at the time. And when the song ended, an English voice came on and said, this is Radio Caroline on 259. We're now handing over to our Dutch service. We'll be back tonight at 5 o'clock. So that was the first time I really heard Caroline. That must have been about January 1973. And I tuned in that evening at 5 o'clock, but heard nothing. Didn't hear it again for a few months after that. So that really re-injected my interest in radio. And it so happened a friend of mine at school had been given a radio for Christmas. And he was telling me he was hearing this station called Radio North Sea International. And I thought, oh, that sounds quite interesting. And I remember tuning around the band, and then one night I heard a chart programme in progress. And it's quite interesting because on the BBC at the time, there was a reggae singer called Judge Dredd, whose records were banned by the BBC. They were considered to be offensive, you know, they were slightly naughty, but, you know, compared to today's standards, totally inoffensive. But the BBC on the chat program would always just skip by Judge Dredd. They'd
say, Big Seven or something.
Big Seven, yeah. They'd say, number 20, Big Seven by Judge Dredd, and then go on to the number 19. But I was listening to this chat program, and they actually played Judge Dredd, you know? I thought, oh, that's quite interesting. And it turned out the chat program was on Radio North Sea International. And that from then, I was just hooked to pirate radio.
Two questions. One, just a small fact check. Was the Comet an Irish lightship?
It was an Irish lightship. And there's an interesting connection with Ballycotton in County Cork, because the Ballycotton lifeboat actually did a famous rescue of the Daunt Rock lightship, which was the Comet, back in, I think it was about 1936. I can't remember the exact date. And of course, in Ballycotton now, I mean, last year I took a couple of photographs of it. There's a memorial to the lifeboat there who performed this rescue on the Comet. And of course, the Comet then became Radio Scotland.
Very good. From the age of 5 to about 11, we've covered. And I'm going to ask it, was it the kind of irregularity and the zaniness of pirate radio that had its attraction? Surely you would think the opposite, that if it wasn't there all the time, people would lose interest. But it seemed to have gathered your interest.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously the offshore stations were regular commercial radio services, you know. And that's what really started me off listening to them. I think it was probably because the music as well. I mean, BBC Radio 1 at that time had a lot of speech programmes. They relayed Radio 2 in the evening. There was like jazz programmes, country and western programmes, which really I wasn't interested in. I was purely interested in pop music of the time. So the fact they played pop all night would be, you know, was interesting. And I think from Radio North Sea's case, it was quite interesting at the time because they had two Scottish disc jockeys. Brian McKenzie was one and Ian Anderson was another. So I think being a Scotsman, I found that quite interesting as well at the time, you know. So I think that's what really got me hooked. But it was just the fact of, you know, they were broadcasting from a ship out in the sea. I mean, at that time, I didn't know how far they were anchored out. They could have been in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, as far as I knew at the time. Just the whole aura around the mystery around offshore radio, I think, capture me as well as the programmes, you know.
There's a common thought that radio is very good in times of adversity, but when the adversity is the radio's own problem and downfall or story, radio is the best at telling its own story. Yeah. So in the early 70s, North Sea and Caroline would have been actively campaigning against the government in power for the opposition when elections were coming up. Was their antics, their promos, their statements on air something that would have drawn you to them?
Well, no, not at that time, because, I mean, really, both North Sea and Caroline at that particular time, they were apolitical, you know, so that there was no political statements made. I think you're right. I mean, Radio North Sea did have a heavily political election campaign in 1970 where they broadcast pro-conservative propaganda. But when I was listening, you know, when I first started listening, there was none of that. It was purely a commercial radio operation. You talked about adversity. I mean, the fact that, you know, the guys were on a ship, you know, and they talk about, I mean, there's a great recording I have of Robin Banks on Radio North Sea one night where the sea is really acting up pretty badly. And he's really struggling with the elements, you know. And I mean, you know, incidents like that, I think, did attract you to, you know, these guys out there playing records against all the odds, against these really bad sea conditions, you know, just to get the music across to us who want to listen, you know. I think there was probably an element of that as well, you know.
Just a quick fact check from me, Ian, in relation to Radio Scotland and the name. Obviously, you wouldn't have known that at the time, but surely the BBC was pretty furious that there was a BBC Radio Scotland, the official station, and then another pirate station calling itself Radio Scotland. So yeah. What do you know about that now?
Yeah, there wasn't, at that time there was no BBC Radio Scotland. There was a Scottish outlet for the Home Service, which was, you know, at that time. I think BBC Radio Scotland really wasn't badged as that until the 70s. So yeah, there was no real, comments or adversity from the BBC regarding that at the time, yeah.
So does your kind of love affair with pirate radio kind of move to land-based, or is it stay at sea for a while?
Well, I think for the first few months, first 6 months or so of 1973, then, yeah, it was at the offshore stations. I was listening to, you know, Caroline and Radio North Sea. I used to buy the Record Mirror, which was a like a music paper. You know, I think it'd been going since the 1950s. And they used to have a lot of coverage of radio, pirate radio. They used to cover R&I, they used to cover Caroline, but they'd also mention stations like Radio Jackie, broadcasting in London, Radio Kaleidoscope, which was another London medium wave land-based pirate. So I started to become aware of those. Record Mirror also broadcast advertisements for free radio magazines. You know, when I first saw it, I thought, free radio? What's that, you know? But there were obviously news sheets covering sort of free radio stations and details about free radio stations. So I started buying them, and they covered the land-based pirates quite heavily from the UK and Europe and Ireland as well, you know. So that's when I started to become aware of land-based pirate radio. At that time in Scotland, there was no real medium-wave land-based pirates that I could pick up, or so I thought at the time. I really had to turn to shortwave. So around September 1973, and this links nicely into my first connection with Irish pirate radio, my parents bought me a Grundig portable radio with a shortwave band. And it covered, I think, continuously from like 5.9 to 7.5 megahertz, which, you know, a small portion of that was the pirate band, as it was kind of referred to. So on Sunday mornings, I started to hear stations on shortwave from the UK and from Europe as well. And I first picked up, around about October 1973, a station broadcasting from Dublin, Ireland, called Radio Valerie, on, I think at that time it was in 6317 kilohertz. And they were on every Sunday morning playing, you know, pop music. They always sounded quite upbeat. I thought, yeah, there was always a good sound to Radio Valerie. Now, I'm not just saying that because I know Dermot now, you know, but it did sound pretty good on air at the time. So that's when I first became aware of Irish pirate radio. And I always remember, you know, it's funny that the little things that stick in your mind, you know, at the end of the broadcast, I remember one of the Valerie guys always saying, "Standing by for Radio Empathy." And I thought, what's this radio empathy? What's that all about? I think what must have been happening, I think I've asked Dermot about this, and it's right. They had a QSO at the end of the broadcast. So Radio Empathy at the time was a medium wave station in Dublin, who they were obviously friends with the Valerie guys. And I think they used to have a kind of cross-band QSO at the end of the broadcast. So that's when I first became aware of the pirate radio scene in Ireland. I think I dropped a letter to Radio Valerie at the time, and I've got one of their QSL cards back from 1973. So that's when I first became aware of land-based pirate radio. And of course, Radio North Sea also had a shortwave transmitter, which meant I could listen to them pretty much all day, because I was in the west coast of Scotland during the summer months. The sky wave didn't really reach my radio, you know, or medium wave. So when I got the shortwave radio, I was able to tune to Radio North Sea on shortwave, you know.
So did the kind of the fun and excitement of the pirates and their antics make you kind of a DXer and an anorak? You know, the allure of them brought you into tuning into radios. You weren't a techie and a radio geek.
Not at all. No, I think, yeah, it was all about, I think it was mainly the music, you know. I was becoming a big music fan, you know. So the Pirates obviously played a lot of music, a lot of different music. I mean, I always, there used to be a DX programme on Radio North Sea International, hosted by a guy called AJ Behrens, who was a Belgian guy who spoke about 17 languages, you know. I mean, his English was and still is impeccable, you know. But he used to play music, you know, he'd play the usual, the Beatles and the Stones and so on, but he'd play things like Johann Strauss waltzes or part of a Beethoven symphony, you know. And I think that's what kind of opened my ears to a wider range of music. Not just pop music, you know, but classical, you know, some jazz or whatever, you know. So I think the Pirates were, or some of the Pirates were quite instrumental in that kind of musical education, you know.
And moving on then, I suppose, to the later 70s, obviously the Irish scene was beginning to take off with the emergence of, you know, more full-time stations and so on. So what were your memories of that period?
So I remember hearing Westside Radio, or Radio Westside, I think he called it at the time, with Dr. Don on shortwave around the mid-70s, about 75 or 76. And Don used to talk on Westside a lot about Radio Dublin, which was a medium wave station, which I'd never heard up to that point. Then I think late one night, round about back end of 1977, winter 1977, I was tuning across the band on 1188. Was it 1188? Yeah, 1187 it would be at that time. It was before the frequency change. And I heard Radio Dublin coming in quite well on channel, you know. And at that time, they were broadcasting on Wednesday nights, if I remember rightly, from like 9 in the evening till 2 in the morning. So I could hear that, obviously. And they were broadcasting all weekend. You know, they started about midday on Saturday and continued through until midnight, Sunday night. So I started, and I remember I wrote a letter to Radio Dublin, and I got a reply from Eamon Cook saying that, you know, these were our current broadcast hours, as I've just mentioned. But he said, I'm planning to broadcast continuously over the Christmas period. That'd be Christmas 77, perhaps for the whole week. And that was a turning point, really. It was an interesting time because he did broadcast over the Christmas period, but he didn't switch off after that. He kept going, and that was really the catalyst, if you like, for full-time pirate radio in Ireland and commercial radio in Ireland. So, yeah, that was my first time hearing Radio Dublin. Not long after that, I think I first came across ARD as well. It's quite interesting because, as I mentioned to you guys earlier, I mean, where I lived in Scotland seemed to be very good for medium wave reception, down to soil conductivity, I think I was told by some techie guy, you know. But ARD on 1161 kilohertz, which was right next door to Radio Clyde, they used to come in really well in my area. So I started listening to ARD. I was listening to Radio Dublin. Then there was a split, of course, with the guys in Radio Dublin, and Big D started up, which also had a good signal into where I was living in Scotland, you know. So that just, it seemed so exciting, you know, all these great radio events happening in Ireland, you know, and it seemed to me that, you know, that was a place to be. I had hidden ambitions to be, you know, to work in radio. It was very difficult at the time to get into radio in Scotland. It was a closed shop. I mean, the only time a vacancy appeared on Radio Clyde, for example, was when someone died, you know. So it was very difficult to get into radio at the time. So I thought, well, Ireland seems to have a real sort of growing radio scene. It'd be quite nice to give it a try over there.
So when did you come to Ireland then?
Well, actually, I first came to Ireland. I'd been in contact with a lot of people over the years. You know, some of my main contacts here, there was a chap called Alan Hilton, who was known as Mark Boland on Southside Radio. And he'd been in Radio Dublin and Big D before that. You know, I used to correspond with him quite a bit, and he'd send me over, you know, tape recordings of some of the Irish stations. So I was well aware of what was happening over there. In the summer of 1981, I decided, you know, the time was now right for me to go and try and do something in radio. And myself and three other friends had planned a tour of the Irish radio stations. So we were going to pack a tour of the country into 7 days, which we did, which I wasn't driving at the time. Only one of us, Gary, was doing the driving, and I think it was quite exhausting for him, but we managed to pack it in. And it was a real eye-opener because, you know, everywhere you went, there was a station. There were stations popping up that we weren't aware were on the air, you know, like in Carrick-on-Suir, there was Radio Carrick, which we'd never heard of before, on, I think it was on 1512 medium wave. In Tipperary Town, there was Tipperary Community Radio, which again was a new one in us. Down in Tralee, there was Kerry Local Radio and FM. So there were so many stations that we knew about all the, you know, the Big D's and ARDs and Sunshines and so on, you know. But, you know, all these stations that are popping up all over the country. I think that tour really sort of opened our eyes to just how big pirate radio was becoming in Ireland.
And how did you get the information for that tour? I mean, what was your source for all these stations? I mean, it was before, yeah, you had, there were some formats of lists and, yeah, logs and so on.
Yeah, well, I think, as I mentioned earlier, we had some contacts in Ireland who sent us over some details. there was also magazines, DX magazines, which you know, people had sent in logs of stations. I mean, we'd heard stuff ourselves in Scotland, like, funnily enough, Community Radio Yall was a regular being heard in Scotland because they had a late night transmission at weekends. I think they come on air about 11 o'clock and went through until 2 or 3 in the morning. So that was heard quite well. So we knew there was a station in Yall, wherever Yall was. We didn't have a clue where Yall was at the time, you know. So all that information was collated from our own listening, from contacts we had over there and from magazines and lists, you know. But as I say, I mean, quite a few of the stations that we came across, nobody had mentioned before, so... There was all these, they were fairly low power, I suppose, so they weren't getting out very, very far. DXers weren't normally hearing them, but it was really a really active time for Irish radio.
Were you kind of an accidental tourist, or were you here with a plan to document and photograph and gather stuff as you were here? Like, was there a purpose to why you were here?
Yeah, that was a problem. I mean, we made a lot of. Recordings. We took a lot of photographs, which most of them are on the DX archive site now from that first tour. So yeah, there was an intention to record what we discovered when we were over there. My intention in the back of my mind was to find some work on one of the radio stations over there. The only problem being that apart from Sunshine and then Nova, which was fairly new, I don't think a lot of the stations actually paid wages. I mean, guys were doing it for, because they wanted to do radio. I was in the position that if I did move to Ireland, obviously I wouldn't have parents to go back and live with or whatever, you know, so I had to make sure I was going to get some regular wages. So we headed off in August, middle of August 1981, got the ferry from Liverpool to Dublin. And I remember the excitement, actually, as we pulled into Dublin Port, because obviously Nova didn't have an AM on at that time, and they just started on FM. I remember being on deck, and Ken had his Grundig satellite radio, you know, the big job, that one of those jobs that, we had that on deck. And I remember hearing, we tuned into Nova, and hearing this lovely FM signal, you know. And we always, it's funny how things stick in your mind. The song they were playing at the time was The Jacksons' What Right Now, you know. And it was just kind of jumping out the radio. And this was the first time we'd really heard Radio Nova and FM. So, that always sticks in my mind. And then, obviously, we started hearing the other stations. We got off the ferry. The first place we headed was Drogheda. Because we'd heard Boyneside Radio quite clearly in Scotland on 1305 kilohertz. They were running quite a few hundred watts at that time. So they were getting a relatively good signal into the west coast of the UK. So we headed up to Drogheda, but things were a bit strange because Boyneside Radio seemed to have disappeared from 1305 and had been replaced by a station called Community Radio Drogheda with a lot of the same voices from Boyneside. So we weren't quite sure what had happened. As we approached Drogheda, our assumption before that was that Boyneside Radio had closed or had changed name or whatever. But as we approached Drogheda, we started hearing on FM Boyneside Radio. I think they were in 98.1 and 99.2 FM. But on 1305 was Community Radio Drogheda. So I think it occurred to us then, it's the age-old story in pirate radio, there's been a split of some sort, which indeed there had been. As we approached Drogheda, we started to hear Boyneside Radio on 1314 kilohertz AM. But they must have been putting out about 2 watts or something because it was barely covering Drogheda itself, the signal. It was a Peter Gibney rig, you know, and I don't know, Peter obviously was very proficient in building transmitters, but I don't know what had gone wrong with this one, but its coverage was limited, to say the least. So it turns out Boyneside Radio were still on the air, on FM, and with this very low-powered transmitter on 1314 kilohertz. So we called in there, and were given a really nice welcome by the guys in Boyneside, showed around the station, showed the transmitters, taken on a tour of Drogheda, to show us the other transmitter sites as well, and also sort of filled in or got one side of the story as to why the stations had split. I sort of said to them at that point, look, I'm interested in working in radio. Is there any jobs going? And just because there'd been a split, they were shorter presenters at the time. And they said, well, yeah. Well, why don't you just go up and make a demo tape in the studio at the moment and we'll see what it's like, you know? I said, well, I don't really have time to do that because we planned this tour of Ireland. When I get back home to Scotland, I'll send you a demo tape because I had a little studio in my bedroom. So we agreed on that. They said they could pay regular money. I think it was about 60 or 70 quid a week they offered at that time, which was enough to survive. So we then continued our tour of Ireland from Drogheda. Went to Sunshine up in Portmarnock, had a nice few hours with the guys there, like Declan Meehan and Stevie Dunn and Tom Hardy were all there, you know, so we had a good old chat with those guys. A couple of days later, we went to Greenacres Country Club, because Treble TR Radio were based there. So we were talking to the guy from Treble TR, and he says, oh, have you seen the big station? We said, what? He goes, oh, Radio Nova's in here. I said, well, no, but don't they broadcast from Herbert Street? He said, no, they've got a studio upstairs in the country club, you know. This was 1981, remember. Apparently what had happened was there was some sort of interference been experienced in Herbert Street, and they had to move Lock, Stock and Barrel up to Greenacres at that time.
Jamming or interference?
I think it was just interference, actually, yeah. Yeah, I don't know that for sure. It may have been jamming, but I think it was interference was given as the reason at the time. So we spoke to the barman at Greenacres, and he said, oh, yeah, they're upstairs. And we spotted a guy at the window and kind of sort of waved to him to come down. It turned out to be a fella called Terry Riley, who was a newsreader, an American guy, who then took us upstairs to the studio. It was a very makeshift affair. John Clark was on air at the time, and he had like a couple of triple stack cart players. All the music was in cart. Which, if you notice, in those early days of Nova, around about the summer of 81, a lot of songs were repeated. And it wasn't because of the now limited playlist we have. I think it was because they had a limited amount of carts actually up there with them, you know, for the, on a temporary basis. So the cart machines, I think there was one turntable and a Revox. And that was it, really. And just in a bare room, you know, with a cable sort of running across the floor of the room going to the transmitter, you know, feeding the audio.
And this, like, Nova AM site was in operation at this stage?
No, it was only FM at that point, on 88.2, I think it was.
And what kind of power were they putting out on AM at the time? On FM at the time, do you think?
I think at that time they were putting out about 20 kilowatts, something like that. It was probably a 5 kilowatt transmitter, I think, if I remember rightly.
FM.
On FM, yeah, on FM. Which is, you know, nothing compared with some of the later pirates, especially up around the border area. But yeah, it was probably about 20 kilowatts or so at the time, yeah, on FM. I remember in Drogheda, I mean, the FM signal was really clear in stereo up in Drogheda as well. So it had good coverage, you know. So I think I remember rightly, you guys will know better than me, that Greenacres is pretty high up.
Yeah.
So it's a good sort of take-off point from there, you know.
Yeah, no, it's the top of Stocking Lane in Redfarnham, yeah. So it can see all over the city, and yeah, that takes it in beyond North County Dublin into Drogheda and yeah, even further afield and up closer to the border. So is that the end of that tour, or is there anything more in that tour before you go home to make that demo tape?
So where do we go? We went to Dublin, visited the stations there. Stations down, you know, in County, in Newbridge, in County Kildare, for example, there was WKRC at the time, which was in 1240 kilowatt. It was off channel, I think it was 1240 it was on. They were on there. There was Kildare Community Radio on medium wave at the time. We headed off to the Midlands. Some friends of ours were operating WABC in Ballyhadreen in County Roscommon at the time. So we went and visited those. Radio Sligo was on the air. Down towards Athlone, there was Radio Carolan on 1125 kilohertz, I think it was. Then headed down towards Limerick. Big L and Radio Lumni were broadcasting. Over to Kerry Tralee and Kerry Local Radio was broadcasting there. Waterford's, Carrick-on-Suir, there was a station there, as I mentioned earlier, and into Cork, where Radio City and Capital and CCLR, I think, were broadcasting at the time, and then back up towards Dublin.
Excluding Nova and Sunshine, what would be the observation kind of commonalities between these stations around Ireland at the time?
I mean, the studios would mostly be like PA mixers, like H&H PA mixers. They'd use cassettes for ads and jingles and so on. They were fairly, you know, the studios were pretty much domestic.
Discotheques for...
Yeah, some had discotheques, some, as I said, had the PA mixers with the domestic turntables. Not to take away, I mean, in a lot of cases, the sound on air was very good, you know. But a lot of them would be running on a shoestring, whereas Nova and Sunshine, obviously, were using proper broadcast quality equipment, you know. And I suppose, ultimately, you know, you could tell the difference from that, you know.
And being in these towns as an outsider, would you pick up any kind of idea of how supported the stations were by the local population?
Yeah, it was interesting because I think we had an impression that when we got to Ireland, you know, everybody would be walking around with radios up to their ears listening to the Pirates, you know, and it wasn't quite like that. I think there was a lot of local support for the stations. I think especially some of the smaller stations, you know, serving a community would have a lot of support. But really in Dublin, you know, the likes of Radio Nova and to Sunshine as well, I suppose, at the time, you know, the people were listening really for the music and for the programmes. I mean, I think Nova, when it came on, with its music format, was quite different from anything else. You know, playing 3-4 songs in a row, very short announcements, you know, with disc jockeys with really nice voices, you know, in quite a laid-back manner. And for me personally, the early Radio Nova period from, you know, June or July 81 through probably until back end of 82, that was my favourite period of the station, you know, before it became too commercialised, you know. And I think it started to sound like an ILR station in the UK, which is not one of the reasons why I would like Radio Nova. I liked it when it sounded quite individual, you know, which it did, I think, for that first year and a half or so, you know.
So you went back to Scotland then after the tour, and how long was it before you came back to Ireland full time?
So we got back middle of August, I think. So I made the tape pretty much straight away and sent it across to Boyneside, and within a day or so they phoned me up and said, yeah, you know, we're interested, would you come across? So within about a month I was over in Drogheda and working the station on Boyneside. It was quite interesting because at that time in Drogheda, I mean, you know, being where it is in the northeast of Ireland, there was quite a lot of, at that time the H-block thing was quite intense. There was a lot of, there was demonstrations in Drogheda and so on. So it was quite an eye-opener for me going over there to a town where this kind of thing, that I didn't really know a lot about at that time, was going on. And there was some sort of trepidation from that respect, but ultimately, you know, once you're with people who know the town and so on, and they help you to settle in fairly quickly. So yeah, I felt, you know, pretty welcome in Drogheda pretty much straight away, you know.
And was the fact that you were a Scot, did that give you some sort of a protection, do you think, in Drogheda, or were people suspicious of the Scottish voice on air, or how did they how did that go down?
Yeah, I think it went down okay. I don't think anybody was ever, I mean, nobody ever said anything to me if they were, you know. I mean, I always felt pretty welcome. I think I don't think people would. I mean, Peter Madison, who sadly passed away a few weeks ago, Peter worked in Boyneside Radio for a year or so. And from what I understand, I mean, Peter, you know, didn't, you know, an English voice in Boyneside, nobody sort of batted an eyelid sort of thing. I suppose at that time, though, it was different because, as I mentioned, that, you know, the H-block thing was in full swing during the period I was there. But no, certainly nobody ever said anything to me, you know, at that point.
Was Boyneside a particular station that was kind of a ground of kind of developing talent that went on to other stations?
Yeah, it was.
Was it like the group of people who were there? Tell us about them.
Yeah. I mean, Boyneside at that time, just to go back a bit, I always thought, you know, the stations in Ireland that I'd like to work for, I mean, obviously there's Nova and Sunshine, but I didn't think I had the experience at that time to do that. I thought, well, ARD always sounds good, and Boyneside, because, you know, we used to be able to hear Boyneside in Scotland, as I mentioned earlier. They had jingles made by CPMG, which was a PAMS offshoot, which made the station sound good. So, I mean, it did sound quite together, you know, and one of the better kind of regional stations, if you like, in Ireland. So, I mean, yeah, I was quite pleased that I was able to join the station. In terms of the people on air at the time, I mean, there was Eric Vaughan was there, who's now Eric Griffin on C103. Owen Larkin was there, who went on to Century Radio, and he's now working in the north of Ireland with City Beat, and he's also in 4FM at the moment as well, I think. So Owen went on to there. Darren Elson, who went on to work on LMFM. So yeah, there was a lot of guys who moved on. Myself obviously went on to work in local radio and back in Scotland, you know. So yeah, it was a lot of talented people there. Yeah.
There was competition for Boyneside in its town, and obviously its name tells us that it's on the banks of the Boyne that runs through Drogheda. But there's, you know, the northeast is, it's got carousels, it's got Telstars, there's other things going on, there's the CRD. Tell us a bit about the splits and the issues there.
So the split happened, when I arrived there was two stations, well there was really three stations in Drogheda. There was Boyneside, there was Community Radio Drogheda, and Radio Carousel also had a transmitter, although it mainly relayed the, at that time, the Dundalk output. So, I mean, the main competition for advertising was between Boyneside Radio and Community Radio Drogheda. The camps had kind of split. I mean, Gavin Duffy and Eddie Caffrey and Richard Crowley and a few others had gone to join CRD. And people like Eric Vaughan and Darren Nelson had stayed with Boyneside. So, you know, the sort of talent pool had split down the middle, if you like. Each had their own kind of following. So there was big rivalry in the town at the time for advertising. There was, you know, undercuts happening, you know, advertising being sold for like a pound a slot kind of thing, you know, just to get advertising in. I think Ebon McDonnell, who owned Boyneside, his answer to the competition was to try and, you know, take an extra step. So he seemed to think starting a television station would help the profile of Boyneside Radio in the town. So that happened around about November, I think it was, 1981. A television transmitter was brought in from Italy, I think it was. Just a small unit. It wasn't very powerful, you know, something like 10 watts, 20 watts or whatever. A TV studio of sorts was built. It was quite an interesting, because it was very much a Heath Macintosh effect, you know. They didn't really have a vision mixer as such. They used to switch between sources by using, you know, buttons from a television. So you press a button and it would switch from camera to camera kind of thing. So it was very, very, very basic.
They call that a jump cut on YouTube now, wouldn't they?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Were you involved in the television service?
I was, yeah.
Were you presenting on air then as well?
Presenting on air, yeah. Well, what they used to do was put the camera into the radio studio. Right. So they'd actually film you doing your radio show.
It's very forward-thinking when you think of the use of social media today. But was there ever an intention to make it anything other than a television feed of what the radio was doing?
Oh, it was, yeah. They had separate programmes. Now, let me think back. So I think when we first started, we broadcast in the evening. The television station probably opened up about 5 o'clock when I was on Boyneside Radio doing the feed, as I mentioned earlier. Then there'd be a news broadcast, I think it's 6:15. So the newsreaders would be shown on screen on Boyneside Television. Then there was a sports report. And following that, there'd be like a local documentary, a local film or whatever, you know. The most ironic that I can remember was at the time, there was interference between the television and the radio station. So we couldn't broadcast separate programmes in Boyneside Radio while the film or the documentary or whatever was going out at the television station. So we had to carry the audio of Boyneside Television on radio. So I remember one, and it sounds absolutely daft now. There was a film of a basketball match, a local basketball match in Drogheda, without any commentary. So all you heard in Boyneside Radio for about half an hour was da-dum, 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 hey! Da-dum, da-dum, da-dum. And that was it for half an hour, you know.
So it was never really a serious operation then, was it?
It was never. They had a few adverts, you know. Yeah. It was never really a serious operation. If you want my own personal view, I thought it was an absolute waste of time. And they'd been better investing money in the radio station, getting a bigger transmitter, getting better studio equipment, rather than wasting money that they did on a TV station that was Mickey Mouse, to say the least, you know. Yeah.
What was the camaraderie like between the DJs between stations? Like, would you visit the other stations, socialise with the jocks from across town?
No. In Drogheda, no. I'll come on to that later. When we move to Cork, I'll come on to that because it's quite different there. But in Drogheda, no, there was an absolute divide between Boyneside Radio and CRD. I think it was quite an acrimonious split. I wasn't there when the split happened, but I think there was some bad feeling, shall we say.
Did the split fix itself up? Like, did Gavin Duffy return to Boyneside's family?
No, Gavin didn't, but I'll come to that as we go along. Yeah, we'll sort of repair it all back round again, you know. The split happened. We didn't really socialise. Although in saying that, Eric Vaughan at the time shared a house with Gavin Duffy and Richard Crowley. So often we got there after the pub, you know, and we'd have a few jars and so on. So, I mean, there was some sort of socialising, I suppose, from that point of view. But other than meeting up in the house, in the DJ house, we didn't really meet down the pub or anything like that, you know.
Was there big money being made? Was the bank runs like need armed protection? Was there money being made here?
I think when Boyneside Radio was on there on its own in Drogheda, there was money being made. I think when the station split, there was less money being made, and it was, you know, it was obviously being split down the middle. Because Boyneside Radio, Community Radio Drogheda, Joe Public didn't know which one was which, really, you know. They'd tune into 225, and they'd hear Radio Drogheda, and they'd think, oh, that's Boyneside. They'd hear Eddie Caffrey's voice, and there was no, I don't think there was any listener loyalty between one station or the other. They just had a voice they liked.
It was the local station.
That's right, yeah. They just had a voice they liked. So I think advertising kind of waned off a little bit at that time in the town, because people were just booking with the station they thought they was, you know, Boyneside Radio. And it may have been CRD, it might have been Boyneside, you know.
It sounds like what was happening in Dublin. Like, the average listener might not have known that it was ARD, Radio Dublin, or Big D they were listening to. They were listening to a jock that was on one station one week, and he might have moved because of a split, or because he got a better offer, or he couldn't put up with the management in some place. So I suppose it was a kind of a copy of, you know, the listener didn't really know the brand, and there was entertainment on the air, but maybe as the salespeople hit the streets, they had to convince the shops and whatever to spend the money with their station as opposed to the other.
That's pretty much it, yeah. I'm pretty sure that nobody knew the difference between Boyneside and Community Radio Drogheda at that particular time, yeah.
And when did the split resolve itself, or when did, you know, Community Radio Drogheda cease to exist?
So I think Community Radio Drogheda, by April 82, was having some real difficulties, financial difficulties, and was in the verge of closing down. So Gavin pulled the plug, and he and Richard Crowley moved to Radio Leinster. Eddie Caffrey and the rest of the Drogheda guys then were welcomed back by Yvonne McDonnell. So they went, you know, despite the fact saying that they would never work again together, eventually they did, you know, which was a good thing for the radio station and for the town, you know. By that time I had left, I had gone, you know. They resolved it about April 82.
As a broadcaster on one of these stations, maybe out of the capital, where you have an ear to what was happening on Sunshine and Nova and the revolution that they were putting into the airwaves?
Oh yeah. I mean, I listened to Sunshine and Nova all the time, you know, when I was in Drogheda, because where we lived, I mean, there was a cracking FM signal from Radio Nova. Sunshine, I think, had just started FM around at that time on 91.6, so we could receive that. Not as good as Nova, but we could receive that in Drogheda as well. So, yeah, I mean, I kept tabs on what was happening in Dublin. I probably didn't go to Dublin as often as I probably would have liked to have done it on reflection, you know. I remember myself and Owen Larkin went for a weekend there and ended up not being able to find accommodation. So we ended up sleeping in Southside Radio in Dunleary, you know, while the Through Night programme. And Andy Coffey, who owned Southside, Andy Ruan, I think he was known as on air, he said, oh yeah, you can sleep there as long as you don't interfere with the programme, you know. So,
you were lucky to have a friendly radio station to sleep in.
Well, exactly, yeah, that's right. Yeah, we slept in Southside Radio that night. And we went down, yeah, that was the one time, really, I went for a radio visit to Dublin during that time in Drogheda. But on reflection, what I wish I had done was gone down to Nova and said to Chris Carey, look, I'll do overnights on a Saturday or something, you know, just to get my foot in the door. But at that time, you know, it didn't really occur to me to do that, you know.
And so you said you had left Boyneside. You had just moved up the coast to Dundalk then, I suppose, at that stage, had you?
Yeah.
To Radio Carousel.
I was... my exit from Boyneside was quite interesting as well, because I was doing... I think my programme was, it ran from 5 till 8 in the evening, and I was due to start doing a disco. So I thought, I'll put on a tape for an hour or so, just for the last hour, you know, so I can get down and set up and stuff. Nobody will ever notice. And of course, it was the one night, this was a Friday night, I think, the one night when Yvonne McDonald, the owner, actually come back to the station in the evening. And I wasn't there, of course, and there was a tape running. So the next Monday when I went in, I was dispensed off, shall we say, you know. And I can see the point, like, you know, I mean, I shouldn't have been doing that. He was paying me for being on the station, and I was elsewhere doing a disco, making some extra money. So that was my exit from Boyneside Radio.
So did you move to Radio Carousel then?
I moved to Radio Carousel then. How did it work? I made a demo tape in Boyneside Studio. I said, okay, you let me go, but can I make a demo tape in the studio? And he said, yeah, okay, fair enough, you know. So you know, it wasn't too acrimonious, the exit. I made the demo tape. Eric Vaughan knew people in Radio Carousel. We dropped the tape in, and they gave me a call. And then I started working on Radio Carousel in Navan, in the shopping centre, which was quite an experience in itself, because it was in a glass booth in the middle of the shopping centre.
When would this have been?
This was late March 1982.
Okay.
You were in this little goldfish bowl in the shopping centre in Navan. You know, people could sort of stick their noses up against the window and so on. But it was quite an experience as well. Hardy at that time, Hugh Hardy was looking to expand. He had the transmitter on in Drogheda, as I mentioned earlier, just relaying the Dundalk programmes. But he also wanted to open a station up in County Monaghan, in Castle Blaney. So myself and Eric Vaughan get drafted in to host the programmes on Radio Carousel in Monaghan. And again, my inexperience at the time, it really comes into there, because I was doing the afternoon programme and playing stuff like Pink Floyd in Castle Blaney, when obviously we're into, you know, things like Susan McCann and Big Tom and so on. So
it wouldn't have been Hugh Hardy's favourite choice of music.
No, he did have a word with me regarding that. He said to me, Stuart, do you ever listen to Radio Carousel? I said, well, yeah, I do. Which I didn't really, I was lying about it, you know. He said, well, if you do, you know, we don't play music like that. So I didn't play music like that anymore.
On air for the stations in this era, would you have been calling out meters, medium wave, or kilohertz, as you refer to them now? And was it more about the name and the brand of the station and being on the network, or was it about the frequency?
I think, it was the name and the frequency. I mean, they did. It was mostly, you know, for the regional stations, it was mainly meters at that time. So Boyneside was in 225 meters. Community Radio Drogheda was in 225 metres as well, which was quite interesting, but, you know, obviously in terms of kilohertz we were in different frequencies. Radio Carousel in Navan announced as 210, although they were in 1386, which wasn't 210. It was mainly metres were the announced identification for wavelength or whatever at the time. I think announcing that the wavelength was a big thing in those days, you know. I suppose the station name as well. I mean, you know, we did. I don't think it as much as branding wasn't as important as it is now. Where, you know, nowadays on radio, you mention the station name every link. In those days, probably you didn't do it so much, you know, because people knew what they were listening to most of the time. I think, you know, they were listening to the radio station from Drogheda or whatever. As I say, they probably didn't realise, was it Boyneside or was it CRD? And perhaps that was a reason to actually use the name even more, you know, just to get that across.
There's an old story that Jack Byrne tells, Jack Byrne from Concord NDCR, that he'd be losing DJs to some of the more commercial stations, he running a community station, and the DJs would report that they'd moved to another station that was paying them £1 a show.
Yeah.
And he'd meet them 6 months later and he'd ask them how they're getting on. They say that, you know, they left the station they were on, they moved to another station because they weren't getting the pound to show that they were promised. And he said, and how are you doing now? And he says, well, I'm on £3 a show. And how's that going for you? Well, I'm not getting the £3. My question would be, was wages a kind of a fluctuating thing, or was it always there?
Yeah, thankfully, for me, it was always there. I mean, Boyneside Radio, in fairness, the money was there every Friday, you know, the little brown envelope was produced. I said to John earlier, you know, Carousel was the only station where I had to chase for payment. But, you know, it came through, you know, it did come through. And I think it was more a logistical thing rather than not wanting to pay me, you know. ERI, I mean, the O'Connor family, they were brilliant, you know. I mean, they paid well and they paid on time. So, you know, for me, even on Z103, when I used to do tape programmes for them, I used to get a letter every week with £20 in the post from them, you know, for doing the tape programme. So I've got to say, in Irish radio, for me, the money was always paid out, you know, which was good. Because as I said earlier, I mean, I was very much reliant on it because I didn't have parents to go to, so I had to pay the rent, had to buy food and so on, so I needed the money. And it was supplemented, as I say, by doing disco work or nightclub work or whatever, you know. But, you know, they were generally good. I think, you know, that positive payment, if you like, was more the exception rather than the rule, because I think talking to some of the other guys down in Cork and so on, some of the stations there didn't pay money at all, you know, and I think in Dublin, with the exception of Nova and Sunshine, it was probably the same, you know.
You are very connected to what's going on in the industry. Is there, like, rumour mills that so-and-so's setting up a station and they're looking for jocks and will you come? Was there, like, more promises or kind of fanciful sort of thinking that there was projects to happen that wouldn't happen and you'd stay put where you were till you saw the colour of their money?
Yeah, well, I remember in Drogheda, there was a chap from Longford. So Darren Elson, Darren was from Athlone, but he used to do a nightclub in Longford. And the fella, it's kind of hazy now, but I think the fella who ran the nightclub wanted to start a radio station in Longford. And I remember a kind of clandestine meeting being set up with myself and Eric Vaughan and Dara and this chap from Longford who was going to start Independent Radio Longford. Dara had suggested myself and Eric as being, you know, to go and work in the station. And it all seemed, you know, he seemed to have the money, he seemed to have the inclination to do it, but in the end it fell through. But there was an Independent Radio Longford appeared later on in the 80s. And I think it was the same, it was Jerry something was the chap's name. And I think it was the same guy who set it up. So he did get there eventually. Even at Radio ERI, there was a chap who owned a restaurant in Cork City called Romano, who had a little radio station in his...
he was involved in WBEN.
He was, yeah. He had a little radio station in his restaurant, a little DJ booth. He just liked going in and playing records and so on. And we used to get in there for, to be honest, he used to give us a free meal now and again, you know, because we were from the radio station. But he was talking about setting up his own radio station. This was in 1982. He said, oh, would you come and work for us kind of thing, you know? We said, well, we're always interested in offers, you know, which never happened at that time. And we kind of just wrote it off at the time. But as you say, he started WBEN a bit later. This was 1982 I'm talking about. He started WBEN in 1985, yeah. So he did get there eventually. So there was stuff like that, you know. There's always people with the intent. I could probably get through about a dozen stories like that, you know, people wanting to set up radio stations. It was always there, you know. Most of them didn't come to fruition. But those two, the Longford one and Romano with WBN, are two that did eventually get on air, you know.
Just coming back to Radio Carousel, I mean, it grew into quite a big network eventually. There was the Drogheda station, there was the Navan station, and then there was a station on the border as well, as far as I remember. And you said at one stage there was the relay in Drogheda. So yeah. Did you get a sense that you were part of something that was pretty significant in the region, in the Northwest? Or was it more, did you feel like you were working in an individual station in Navan, for instance?
I think the Carousel network was quite expansive, you know. It did have quite a coverage at the time. And I think, as we mentioned before, when we were talking earlier, I think probably Hugh Hardy always had this dream of this large network, and because of the expansive nature, I think he probably lost focus in some of the stations now and again. Because the likes of Radio Carousel and Navin, I mean, it was quite successful for a period. Then it started to lose listeners. Boyneside moved into Navin, you know, so that took some of the... Because Carousel was seen very much as a Dundalk station, you know. Although Boyneside was from Drogheda, obviously, but I think it had closer ties with Navin, you know. So I think Hugh sometimes took his eye, great intentions, but he took his eye off the ball sometimes with some of the stations. From my point of view, I mean, no, really, it was just sort of moving around the stations, getting paid for it. As I mentioned to you before, I was never a big fan of Radio Carousel. I didn't think it sounded the best sometimes, you know. And to be honest, the only reason I was there was to get money, you know. And yeah, as soon as I, you know, had the possibility to go somewhere else, I would take it. It was a big network, but I don't think it was the best, to be quite honest. Going back to Castle Blaney, so I mean, Hugh set up a station there at the Big Tom recording studios in Castle Blaney.
It's a far cry from Pink Floyd.
Well, it is, yeah, exactly, yeah. And I remember the first time I arrived, I mean, I didn't know where it was or who it was, you know, and Eric Vaughan said to me, "Oh, that's Big Tom there." He was a hell of a nice guy, like, you know, very, very down-to-earth man, you know, washing his car. I forget what kind of car it was. I think it was quite a fancy one, you know, as you would expect from Big Tom, you know. But, yeah, I remember arriving at the studios there. And I had an experience as well. You should never really judge people when you don't know the facts. There was a chap worked in Radio Carousel at that time called Tommy Toll. Very, very nice man from Castle Blaney. And he'd been involved with the original Big M, which had closed down at that point. And
Tom, so what are we talking about here then? What period was this when Hugh Hardy set up the station in Monaghan?
March 82. Okay. March, April 82.
Because there was a Big M that came on that was on later. Was that the same station or a different one?
Well, part of the story I'm just going to tell.
Oh, I'm sorry. go ahead and tell us.
So Tommy was from Castle Blaney. He'd been involved in the original Big M. And when he knew I was Scottish, he said to me, "Oh, yeah, I work for Radio Scotland." I said, "All right, yeah, from the Comet." I said, "Ah, right. And I kind of dismissed the story a little bit because I'd never heard his name or so on. And it's only years later, on eBay, I bought a copy of the Radio Scotland magazine. And on the back, Tommy lived in Glasgow with his family at the time. And he ran the Irish Club in Glasgow. And on the back of the magazine, it said, "Oh, on Tuesday nights, 10:30, on Radio Scotland, the Irish Club programme with Tommy Toll." So it was right. Tommy was a Radio Scotland DJ. And I always regret being, not dismissive, but sort of doubting what he was saying, simply because I'd never heard his name, you know. And he was such a nice fella as well. And yeah, Tommy stayed at Carousel for a bit. I don't think he particularly liked Hugh Hardy. So he left and restarted Big M in the town, probably around about the summer of 1982.
For Hugh?
No, as a separate venture.
Okay.
And that stayed on there until the end, in 88. But Tommy had moved on, and he set up Hometown Radio in Castle Blaney, which was a 981 kilohertz, I think, yeah, which stayed on there until the end. And Tommy died a couple of years after 88, I think, you know, very, very suddenly of a heart attack, which was quite sad, you know, a very, very nice man.
So Hugh Hardy's station, Radio Carousel Monaghan, was quite short-lived then?
Short-lived, yeah. It didn't last very long at all. I don't think Castle Blaney was in the right market for another Radio Carousel station, to be quite honest, you know. I think it was seen as an outsider, as it was in Drogheda. And I think Hugh was just trying to elbow in the market, and it didn't work for him, you know.
It's interesting because Hugh, obviously being from that part of Louth himself, up Omeath, I think...
Yeah.
Maybe it was because of the association with him that people thought that the station was essentially a Dundalk station or a North Louth station, that the station could not make itself more than just its owner, and that the identity of the station was deeply linked to its owner.
I think that statement's very accurate, you know. I think that's certainly part of it, you know. It must have lasted maybe a couple of months. Because we actually get to, I think it started just to relay Dundalk again, and we get moved down to Drogheda, because he was trying to make inroads there, you know. Myself and Eric Vaughan again, and Don Allen were doing the live programmes from the Boyne Valley Hotel in Drogheda, you know. Again, trying to, you know, sort of squeeze into that Drogheda market. That was the point where Community Radio Drogheda had closed down and merged again with Boyneside, you know. But again, it didn't last very long at all. And he decided to wind down operations. So myself and Don Allen were let go. Because he said, well, he didn't say it so many words, but he couldn't afford to pay us anymore, which was fine, you know. At that point, Don had been talking to the Voice of Peace off Israel. And he said to me, oh, are you interested in going to the Voice of Peace? I said, well, I am, yeah. But I'm going to take a holiday for a couple of weeks in Scotland first. I'll give you a call when I get there, and we can arrange it from there. But as it turned out, neither of us eventually went to the Voice of Peace, you know, because I ended up back in Scotland for a bit of a break, and then other events overtook that, you know. So, yeah, that was it.